This is podcast number 152 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. I'm Marlene Peterson, and today I'm telling the story of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. As this month's Mother's University topic is poetry, I thought I'd share one of my favorite poets with you. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow is rightly known as the children's poet. I'm sure most of you are familiar with his Midnight Ride of Paul Revere, or that you sang his I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day during the Christmas season. In the little sample I'll share with you today, he says that his favorite poem was Evangeline. In tomorrow's podcast, I'll tell you the true story of Evangeline as told by her adopted mother, which includes a story of Canada for this month's topic and is so fitting with today's headlines where we hear of exiles and immigrants and families torn apart. I can't help but wonder if Longfellow loved Evangeline because it was reflective of the sorrows of his own life. It's a story of two young people in love who were suddenly and cruelly separated. Longfellow's first wife, after they had been married only a short time, died while they were on a trip abroad in Europe. He remarried and had several children, and one day his wife was sealing packets of their children's hair as keepsakes, and a drop of the sealing wax fell on her dress and ignited it on fire. Longfellow was in the other room and heard her screaming. He rushed in to help her, extinguishing the flames with his own body, burning himself badly in the process. In fact, he grew his recognizable beard to cover the scars. But the injuries of his wife were too severe, and she died. Adding to that sorrow, his son was wounded in a Civil War battle. It was when he went off to his side that he felt the gloom of the world around him and penned the words, I heard the bells on Christmas Day, and finally resolved, in spite of all his sorrows and anguish, God is not dead, nor doth he sleep. I'm going to link a book in Internet Archive called The Children's Longfellow that has a section of Evangeline as well as some of his other most popular works. One of my favorites is The Village Blacksmith that reminds us of the way our lives are forged daily by our deeds and thoughts. You can almost hear the pounding of the anvil in the rhythm. Let me share it. Under a spreading chestnut tree, the village smithy stands. The smith, a mighty man is he, with large and sinewy hands, and the muscles of his brawny arms are strong as iron bands. His hair is crisp and black and long. His face is like the tan. His brow is wet with honest sweat. He earns whate'er he can, and looks the whole world in the face, for he owes not any man. Week in, week out, from morn till night, you can hear his bellows blow. You can hear him swing his heavy sledge with measured beat and slow, like a sexton ringing the village bell when the evening sun is low. And children coming home from school look in at the open door. They love to see the flaming forge and hear the bellows roar, and catch the burning sparks that fly like chaff from a threshing floor. He goes on Sunday to the church and sits among his boys. He hears the parson pray and preach. He hears his daughter's voice singing in the village choir, and it makes his heart rejoice. It sounds to him like her mother's voice singing in paradise. He needs must think of her once more, how in the grave she lies, and with his hard, rough hands he wipes a tear out of his eyes. Toiling, rejoicing, sorrowing, onward through life he goes. Each morning sees some task begin, each evening sees it close. Something attempted, something done, he has earned a night's repose. Thanks, thanks to thee, my worthy friend, for the lesson thou hast taught. Thus at the flaming forge of life our fortunes must be wrought. Thus on its sounding anvil shaped each burning deed and thought. There's also a poem called The Building of the Ship that's in this book. I don't know about you, but I am so sad at what I see happening in our country today. The divisions, the ignorance, the lack of understanding of our story and the sacrifices others made to gift us what we have. In a few days, as we begin month 6, we'll be talking about our new nation and especially the gift of freedom. This final stanza of Longfellow's poem, The Building of the Ship, stirs my heart as I think about these things. Thou too sail on, O ship of state, sail on, O Union, strong and great. Humanity with all its fears, with all the hopes of future years, is hanging breathless on thy fate. We know what master laid thy keel, what workman wrought thy ribs of steel, who made each mast and sail and rope, what anvils rang, what hammers beat, in what a forge and what a heat were shaped the anchors of thy hope. Fear not each sudden sound and shock, 'tis of the wave and not the rock, 'tis but the flapping of the sail and not a rent made by the gale. In spite of rock and tempest's roar, in spite of false lights on the shore, sail on, nor fear to breast the sea. Our hearts, our hopes, are all with thee. Our hearts, our hopes, our prayers, our tears, our faith triumphant o'er our fears, are all with thee, are all with thee. And now I want to share today's sampler. In month two, I shared the story of Edward Bok from Holland, who, as a young man, visited the great and noble men of his time and shared his experiences with them. One of those men was Longfellow, and this is his account of the day spent with him that gives you a wonderful glimpse into the kind and warm heart of the poet. Going to the Theater with Longfellow. When Edward Bok stood before the home of Longfellow, he realized that he was to see the man around whose head the boy's youthful reading had cast a sort of halo, and when he saw the head itself, he had a feeling that he could see the halo. No kindlier pair of eyes ever looked at a boy as, with a smile, the white Mr. Longfellow, as Mr. Howells had called him, held out his hand. "I'm very glad to see you, my boy," were his first words, and with them he won the boy. Edward smiled back at the poet, and immediately the two were friends. "I've been taking a walk this beautiful morning," he said next, "and am a little late getting at my mail. Suppose you come in and sit at my desk with me, and we will see what the postman has brought. He brings me so many good things, you know." "Now, here's a little girl," he said as he sat down at the desk with the boy beside him, "who wants my autograph and a sentiment. What sentiment, I wonder, shall I send her?" "Why not send her 'Let us then be up and doing'?" suggested the boy. "That's what I should like if I were she." "Should you indeed?" said Longfellow. "That's a good suggestion. Now suppose you recite it off to me so that I shall not have to look it up in my books, and I will write as you recite. But slowly, you know I am an old man and write slowly." Edward thought it strange that Longfellow himself should not know his own great words without looking them up. But he recited the four lines so familiar to every schoolboy, and when the poet had finished writing them, he said, "Good, I see you have a memory. Now, suppose I copy these lines once more for the little girl and give you this copy. Then you can say, you know, that you dictated my own poetry to me." Of course, Edward was delighted, and Longfellow gave him the sheet as it is here. "Let us then be up and doing with a heart for any fate, still achieving, still pursuing, learn to labor and to wait. Henry W. Longfellow." Then, as the fine head bent down to copy the lines once more, Edward ventured to say to him, "I should think it would keep you busy if you did this for everyone who asked you." "Well," said the poet, "you see, I am not so busy a man as I was some years ago, and I shouldn't like to disappoint a little girl, should you?" As he took up his letters again, he discovered five more requests for his autograph. At each one, he reached into a drawer in his desk, took a card, and wrote his name on it. "There are a good many of these every day," said Longfellow, "but I always like to do this little favor. It is so little to do, to write your name on a card, and if I didn't do it, some boy or girl might be looking day by day for the postman and be disappointed. I only wish I could write my name better for them. You see how I break my letters? That's because I never took pains with my writing when I was a boy. I don't think I should get a high mark for penmanship if I were at school, do you?" "I see you get letters from Europe," said the boy as Longfellow opened an envelope with a foreign stamp on it. "Yes, from all over the world," said the poet. Then looking at the boy quickly, he said, "Do you collect postage stamps?" Edward said he did. "Well, I have some right here then," and going to a drawer in a desk, he took out a bundle of letters and cut out the postage stamps and gave them to the boy. "There's one from the Netherlands. There's where I was born," Edward ventured to say. "In the Netherlands? Then you are a real Dutchman." "Well, well," he said, laying down his pen, "can you read Dutch?" The boy said he could. "Then," said the poet, "you are just the boy I am looking for." And going to a bookcase behind him, he brought out a book, and handing it to the boy, he said, his eyes laughing, "Can you read that?" It was an edition of Longfellow's poems in Dutch. "Yes, indeed," said Edward. "These are your poems in Dutch." "That's right," he said. "Now, this is delightful. I am so glad you came. I received this book last week, and although I have been in the Netherlands, I cannot speak or read Dutch. I wonder whether you would read a poem to me and let me hear how it sounds." So Edward took The Old Clock on the Stairs and read it to him. The poet's face beamed with delight. "That's beautiful," he said, and then quickly added, "I mean the language, not the poem." "Now," he went on, "I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll strike a bargain. We Yankees are great for bargains, you know. If you will read me The Village Blacksmith, you can sit in the chair there made out of the wood of the old spreading chestnut tree, and I'll take you out and show you where the old shop stood. Is that a bargain?" Edward assured him it was. He sat in the chair of wood and leather and read to the poet several of his own poems in a language in which, when he wrote them, he never dreamed they would ever be printed. He was very quiet. Finally, he said, "It seems so odd, so very odd to hear something you know so well sound so strange." "It's a great compliment, though, isn't it, sir?" asked the boy. "Yes," said the poet slowly. "Yes, yes," he added quickly. "It is, my boy, a very great compliment." "Ah," he said, rousing himself as a maid appeared, "that means luncheon, or rather," he added, "it means dinner, for we have dinner in the old New England fashion, in the middle of the day. I'm all alone today, and you must keep me company, will you? Then afterward we'll go out and take a walk, and I'll show you Cambridge. It is such a beautiful old town, even more beautiful, I sometimes think, when the leaves are off the trees." "Come," he said, "I'll take you upstairs, and you can wash your hands in the room where George Washington slept. And comb your hair, too, if you want," he added, "only it isn't the same comb that he used." To the boyish mind, it was an historic breaking of bread, that midday meal with Longfellow. "Can you say my grace in Dutch?" he asked, as they sat down, and the boy did. "Well," the poet declared, "I never expected to hear that at my table. I like the sound of it." Then, while the boy told all that he knew about the Netherlands, the poet told the boy all about his poems. Edward said he liked Hiawatha. "So do I," he said, "but I think I like Evangeline better." "Still," he added, "neither one is as good as it should be, but those are the things you see afterwards so much better than you do at the time." It was a great event for Edward when, with the poet nodding and smiling to every boy and man he met, and lifting his hat to every woman and little girl, he walked through the fine old streets of Cambridge with Longfellow. At one point of the walk, they came to a theatrical billboard announcing an attraction that evening at the Boston Theater. Skillfully, the old poet drew out from Edward that sometimes he went to the theater with his parents. As they returned to the gate of Craigie House, Edward said he thought he would go back to Boston. "And what have you on hand for this evening?" asked Longfellow. Edward told him he was going to his hotel to think over the day's events. The poet laughed and said, "Now, listen to my plan. Boston is strange to you. Now, we're going to the theater this evening, and my plan is that you come in now, have a little supper with us, and then go with us to see the play. It's a funny play, and a good laugh will do you more good than to sit in a hotel all by yourself. Now, what do you think?" Of course, the boy thought, as Longfellow did, and it was a very happy boy that evening who, in full view of the large audience in the immense theater, sat in that box. It was, as Longfellow had said, a play of laughter, and just who laughed louder, the poet or the boy, neither ever knew. Between the acts there came into the box a man of courtly presence, dignified and yet gently courteous. "Ah, Philip," said the poet, "how are you? You must know my young friend here. This is Wendell Phillips, my boy. Here is a young man who told me today that he was going to call on you and on Phillips Brooks tomorrow. Now you know him before he comes to you." "I shall be glad to see you, my boy," said Mr. Phillips. "And so you are going to see Phillips Brooks? Let me tell you something about Brooks. He has a great many books in his library which are full of his marks and comments. Now, when you go to see him, you ask him to let you see some of those books, and then, when he isn't looking, you put a couple of them in your pocket. They would make splendid souvenirs, and he has so many he would never miss them. You do it, and then when you come to see me, tell me all about it." And he and Longfellow smiled broadly. An hour later, when Longfellow dropped Edward at his hotel, he had not only a wonderful day to think over, but another wonderful day to look forward to as well. He had breakfasted with Oliver Wendell Holmes, dined, supped, and been to the theater with Longfellow, and tomorrow he was to spend with Phillips Brooks. Boston was a great place, Edward Bok thought, as he fell asleep.